Okay, so David's out of town. I'm going to be with you for the next 2 weeks. So I have lesson 7, lesson 8. We will wrap up chapter 6 today and then move into chapter 7 next week. We are continuing our study of the Sermon on the Mount. We've titled it Mountaintop Lessons for Modern Day Living. And the class today is covering a very applicable topic. We're going to talk about worry and spend some time really dissecting what did Jesus really mean when he said, do not worry. Before we dive into verses 25 through 34, we'll actually back up a little bit because I think last class, David spent like 2 minutes on 19 through 24, and you have to understand 19 through 24 well to understand verses 25 through 34. So we'll spend a little bit of time on verses 19 through 24 before we dive into verses 25 through 34. But if you've ever been in a semester class with me, you'll know one of the things I like to do is just spend a little bit of time kind of recapping what we've been studying, what we've been learning together, because I think there's kind of two purposes of it. One is the more often we do that, the higher the propensity some of this stuff sticks in our mind. But the other reason is because you really start to see the pattern of what it is that you see in these verses. And in the Sermon on the Mount, there are themes in what Jesus is teaching in verses 5 and in chapter 5 and chapter 6 and chapter 7. And there are certainly themes in here that he is focused on in these chapters. And they are going to continue in the verses we're looking at today. And so I think it is helpful, and we're in lesson 7. So it's a good time to just spend a moment recapping what have we been looking at? What have we been learning? And you all have studied these chapters a lot in your past, so if you help me, we'll get through it pretty quickly, which I need you to help me because it's a lot of verses to look at. As you know, Matthew doesn't write in chronological order, but I think it's probably a pretty fair assumption that the Sermon on the Mount was early in Jesus' ministry. It makes a lot of sense when you look at kind of the timeline of Jesus' life. At the end of chapter 3, what has happened at the end of chapter 3? What did Jesus do? Yep, someone said it. He was baptized, okay? So he's baptized at the end of chapter 3. Right, he ascends out of the water, and then what happens in chapter 4? Immediately he's taken away to where? The wilderness, to be what? Tempted by who? Satan. Okay, and so he's tempted, and three times. The devil leaves him, and then what's it say in chapter 4 in verse 12? Where does he leave? Where does he depart for? Galilee. So he goes to Galilee. And so he's in Galilee, and in chapter 4, verses 17, he begins to do what? He begins to preach. And what's he preach? Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Okay? And so he begins to preach. And in verse 18, what's he do? He starts to meet some people. What's he doing? All right, so he starts to gather the disciples. And so we see that he's gathering the disciples. And in verse 23, what do we learn? He's doing what? He's teaching where? Synagogues. He's doing what else? Healing. All right, so he's teaching in synagogues. He's preaching. He's healing people. And because he's teaching and preaching and healing people, what's happening? All right, he's getting following. He's becoming very famous throughout all the region. And so what happens? All these people are starting to what? They're all starting to follow him. So this great multitude of people are starting to follow him. And so we have this great multitude of people following him. And in chapter 5, he goes up to this mountain. It's an unknown mountain to us, unnamed mountain, and he sits down to preach. And so we have then this very, you know, by his standards, very long sermon that he preaches. And it's Matthew 5 through 7. Okay, so he sits and preaches this sermon to everyone. And there's, if you study Sermon on the Mount, you'll see some theories that people talk about the Sermon on the Mount. There's a theory that it wasn't actually a single sermon. It was, in fact, collections of teachings that he did that Matthew had aggregated. I don't believe that's true. I don't believe that's true because when you study it, you'll learn, again, these themes run through it. We'll talk about those themes in a moment. The other thing you'll hear is that Jesus, a theory about it, is that Jesus did not expect the people to follow his instructions. Meaning, what he was asking of them was impossible for them to follow. So people will look at and say, look, he talks about retaliation. This concept of if someone slaps you on one cheek, you're supposed to do what? Turn the other cheek. This concept of, hey, what are you supposed to do with your enemies? You're supposed to do what? Bless them. Pray for them. He couldn't have really meant that. Even this concept we're going to talk about, worrying. You're not supposed to worry? There's no way Jesus really meant this. I think you all know this. That's not true. And all you, I don't want to get ahead of David, but all you need to do is look at the last part of the Sermon on the Mount. What's the last story Jesus tells in the story of the Mount? The story about what? The what? The wise man and the foolish man. And all you need to do is look at that story, and I think it's pretty clear that Jesus expects us to do these things, okay? No matter that they are difficult. Okay, so as we think about the Sermon on the Mount, there are some things that I think are important as we get into these verses. These are some of the things that David has talked about, but if you keep these things in mind, it helps you understand a lot of what Jesus is talking about, okay? And so one of them is there's this concept in the Sermon on the Mount that this is Jesus versus the old law, okay? That this is Jesus versus the old law. And that is not the right way to think about this, okay? This is not Jesus facing off against the old law. Who was around when God gave the old law? Yeah, Moses. But who else was with God? Jesus. This is not Jesus versus the old law, okay? This is Jesus versus what had happened with the old law. What did the Pharisees done with the old law? Perverted it. They distorted it. What had they done? They had taken their traditions, overlaid it with the old law, and taught the people that the traditions were more important to follow. Okay? So what Jesus is doing is he's facing off against those traditions. So when you think about what Jesus is teaching, he is not teaching something contrary to the law. Okay? What he's doing is he's tackling the traditions of the Pharisees. So think of it that way. Now, is a lot of what he's teaching, is it different for the people? Is it different from what they've been taught or what they think? Is it a new way of thinking for them? It is, but why is that the case? It's the case because the people have been taught about these traditions, okay? And what is it he's teaching them? What is it he's trying to get them to think about? What's he focusing on? The heart. Okay? So he's focusing on the heart. And you'll see that throughout all these verses. It's getting them back to thinking about the heart. It's not just the act. It's about the heart. It's about the intent. It's about what's in your mind. And that's what he's trying to focus them on. Now, is that a different way of thinking for them? Absolutely. Why? Because the Pharisees have focused on their traditions. Okay? And so what is he doing? What is Jesus doing? Who is he taking aim at? Very clearly, who is he taking aim at? The scribes and the Pharisees. Matthew chapter 5, verse 20, what's he say to the people? Your righteousness needs to exceed whose? The righteousness of the scribes or the Pharisees. And if it doesn't, you cannot what? Enter the kingdom of heaven. All right. So, Jesus is not against, this is not Jesus versus the law. This is Jesus versus the tradition of the Pharisees. He is clearly tackling the Pharisees. Okay? So he's taking them on. Okay? But he's also addressing clearly issues they have, challenges they have, right? And what are some of those issues? What are some of the challenges they have? Anger, murder, marriage, divorce, oaths, retaliation, enemies, money, worry. Any of those sound like problems we have today? Isn't that interesting? Isn't it interesting that some of the problems that they had 2,000 years ago are the same issues that we're dealing with today? But he took them on, right? He took them on. And he also took them on, and it was clear to the people that he spoke with what? Authority. The last verse in chapter 7, when he ends, okay? When Jesus is done with the Sermon on the Mount, he finishes, okay? He doesn't give an invitation, right? There's not an invitation song. He just finishes. And when he finishes, they're astonished because of what? He spoke not as a scribe, but as one with what? How did they know that? How did they, after listening to him, he's sitting on the mountain and he talks to him from chapter 5, 6, and 7. How did they know he spoke with authority? What was it about the preaching that led them to understand he spoke with authority? Okay. So, what's something that is he consistently says? But I say to you, you have heard it said, but I say to you. 14 times he says it. But I say to you, you've heard it said this, but I say to you this. 14 times he says it. He makes it very clear that he's speaking with authority. And they understand that he's speaking with authority. Okay? All right. So keep those things in mind as we go through this. All right. So really quickly, like super quickly. All right. So, so we begin with, as you all know, the Beatitudes in verses 3 through 12, all right? And in the Beatitudes, blessed, right? Blessed, fortunate are we, privileged are we, happy are we. Why are we privileged? Why are we happy? Because of we have certain privileges, right? We have certainly privileges. Why do we have those privileges? Because of what? Our relationship with who? With God. So he begins and says, blessed are you because of the relationships you have with God. Not because of anything else. Not because of anything external. You're blessed, you're privileged because of the relationship you have with God. All right, so that's how he starts the sermon. And then he talks about their personal influence. And he talks about salt and he talks about light, right? And we all know salt at that time, it was either seasoned meat, it was to preserve meat. We talk about light. We often, you know, we can't think about light without, you know, our context today, right? We take it for granted. We flip a switch, it comes on, right? But think about light back then, right? You'd go into rooms and it was dark and light would penetrate the environment. You could see with it, right? And so what does salt do? Salt penetrates its environment, right? Light penetrates its environment. What's he saying to us? What's the expectation that he had of them and he has of us? Just like salt penetrates its environment, just like light penetrates its environment and has an impact, what's he expect of us? Same thing, right? that we penetrate our environment and that we have an effect, and that we have a good effect. That's right. So he also warns, right, that you can have a good effect and a bad effect, right? And that you can choose not to have those effects as well, right? So he wants us to have an effect. And then he gets into, in detail, this relationship that he has with the law. Now, he's correcting a misunderstanding. What was the misunderstanding of Jesus? What was the view of Jesus? That he was there to destroy what? The law, right? It says the law and the prophets. What's that referring to? Another name for it. Law and the prophets is the what? The Ten Commandments, Old Testament, right? And so there was a view that he was there to destroy. He says, I'm not there to destroy it. I'm here to what? Fulfill it. What's that mean? To fulfill it. What was the expectation for Jesus to do? Okay. There was an expectation of a king. What was else? To establish the church, right? And so there was this view of something needed to, the old law needed to come to an end, and it was his job to fulfill that, right? So he wasn't there to destroy it, right? So he was there to fulfill the law, right? And then this comes back to the concept we talked about before, right? What was, he wasn't there to destroy it, but he was there to challenge the view of that, or he was there to challenge the traditions of the Pharisees. You know, one of the things that's helpful is having all of the writings of Paul, right? Because what was Paul? Who was Paul before he was a Christian? He was a Pharisee. In fact, he was a very what? Devout Pharisee. And we see in his writings him talk a lot about his past. He defends his conversion 3 times in Acts, so he talks a lot about himself and his life before he was a Christian. And one of the things he talks about in Galatians 1, chapter 14, he talks about that he advanced in Judaism beyond his contemporaries because he was more zealous in for the what of his fathers. Does anyone know? He was more zealous for the what of his fathers. Anyone know what it says? Someone flip to Galatians chapter 1, verse 14 for me. Someone has that, just raise their hand for me. All right, so what does it say? All right, so it says something like, I advanced in Judaism beyond my contemporaries because I was more zealous for the traditions of my fathers. Okay? So the Pharisees, the traditions were extremely important. And so we learn, right, that was what drove the Pharisees. And so they, again, think of it as they put these traditions over the law, and that was what was important to them. And so that's what he's there to address. And again, we covered it already, Matthew chapter 5, verse 20. Jesus says, your righteousness has to exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees if you want to enter the kingdom of God. And then, right, he's setting all that up because then in verses 21 through 48, he begins to address all of these matters, right? He addresses anger and murder, adultery, divorce, oaths, retaliation, enemies. And this is where we see the series of you have heard it said, and what he's talking about is the traditions of the Pharisees. You have heard it said, what the Pharisees have told you, but I say to you, and this is the right way to think of it. And he's going back to what the original intent was, what God really intended. How did he know what God really intended? He was God. He was there. He knew. Okay? And so was this different way of thinking for the people? Was it different from what they thought? Yeah. This was different. Okay? This was different from what they thought. But what's he say? What was the problem with murder? Was it where did it start? When did it become a real problem? Was it the act or was it what? It was the anger you had in your heart that eventually led to the act. What's the problem with adultery? Is it just the act of adultery or is it what? The lust that you have in your heart that manifests itself into the act. And so Jesus is changing their way of thinking, but really trying to take them back to what the original intent was. And he's trying to get at the heart. Okay? You understand now why the Pharisees wanted to get rid of him. Do you understand? This is why they wanted to get rid of him. Okay? He is getting the people to flip on him. All right? He is not just changing the way people are thinking about God and what it means to believe in God, but he is changing everything. He is changing the way they think about the Pharisees, right? And this is why they went to the lengths they eventually went to, right, to get rid of Jesus. All right. So we go through all that. Now we get to chapter 6. Chapter 6, Jesus talks about your real motivations. Who's he still attacking? Who's he going after? He refers to them as hypocrites. He refers to them as heathens. He refers to them as them or they, but who's he really talking about? Still the Pharisees. Okay, so he talks about three religious acts, right? Giving, praying, and fasting. All right? What were the Pharisees doing with those acts? Why were they doing them? They were doing them to be seen by men. Is that why we do them? Why do you do them? If you're doing them for the right reason, why are you doing them? Okay, so again, it's if you're doing it for the right reason in your heart, you're doing it to help others, to honor God, to draw close to God, right? And so where does he say you need to do these things? In a secret place, okay? So here's the thing. If you do it in public, for public, and when he says that, what he means, as you all know, if you're doing it in public, and you're doing it in public to be seen by men, what's your reward? Whatever compliments you get from men, that's your reward. But if you do it in a secret place, who rewards you? God. So that's the way it works. Pretty simple, right? If you're doing it for the right reason in your heart, then God will reward you. Okay? And so he says, if you're going to give, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. If you're going to pray, go into a secret place and pray. And if you're going to fast, then clean up your appearance so no one even knows what you're doing. Right? That's the reason you're doing it. If you're doing it for the right reason, do it in a way that no one even knows why you're doing it. The only one that needs to know is God. And that's the true motivation for why you're doing it. Okay? Now, importantly, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I think it's important, I don't want to skip over this, that when he's going through these three items, right, he's talking about this is the right way to do these religious acts, right? This is the right way to give. This is the right way to pray. This is the right way to fast, okay? He detours right at the end of how to pray, and he just covers a topic in two verses. What's that topic he covers in two verses? Forgiving. Does anyone find that a little bit odd? I mean, it's in the prayer, but if you think about it, I mean, he doesn't have to go cover that topic, right? I mean, it's a little bit of a detour. What's that tell you about forgiveness? Super important. Super important. The more and more I've studied that, the more I realize how important that is. And that's just, I don't want you to ever overlook that he in the middle of this entire sermon, it's like he just stops for a moment and says, let me just tell you about forgiveness. God will forgive you, but you have to do what? You have to forgive others. Okay? And it's about salvation. Okay? It's about salvation. If you want God to forgive you, you have to forgive others. And I have boxed those verses off in my Bible because I think there is something to the fact that Jesus detoured in that entire train of thought and talked about that. Okay, so that brings us to verses 19 through 24. Okay, and These verses are helpful because these verses will give us a little bit of context for the verses we're looking at in verses 25 through 34. And as I said a few moments ago, David covered these briefly last class, but I'll just go ahead and put all this up here since you saw it last week. But I want to spend just a moment on these because it will help us understand a little bit better the verses we're looking at in verses 25 through 34. Okay, so we are shifting into a conversation about money, and so he starts in verse 19. And he basically says there are two kinds of treasures. Okay, you can lay up for yourself treasures on earth or lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. So he describes the treasures on earth, and he's talking about material things. And what if you're laying up for yourself treasures on earth, what can happen to them? In verse 19. All right. So, they can get destroyed, right? They're destructible. And what else can happen to them? All right, they can get stolen, right? What's it mean? They're what? They're temporary, right? And then he compares that to if you lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. And when you lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, are they destructible? Can they be stolen? They're permanent, right? And so he says, look, you got sort of two options, right? Either focus on things on, you know, focus on material things on earth that are temporary, or you can focus on heavenly things that are permanent. All right? But then he says this, and he goes back again. This is the theme. Back to the heart. He says, wherever your treasure is, that's where your heart. Can your heart be in two places? No. Your heart can't be in two places. I want you to think back for a moment to the conversation that he had with when he was going through anger and murder and divorce, and he was trying to get everyone to understand about the purpose of the heart. And if the purpose of that instruction was to try to convince everyone that they needed to understand that they shouldn't follow the traditions of the Pharisees, right? What does that clearly indicate the problem was with the Pharisees? That they weren't using their what? Their heart. So now he's talking about money, and he's saying where you're putting your focus. And he's saying you can either put your focus on heaven or on material things, but wherever your heart is, right, wherever your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. If the Pharisees had a problem with their heart, what's he coming back here and saying again? Don't follow what? Don't follow right? So this theme of continuing to focus on, you need to have a better righteousness than the Pharisees, right? You need to think about the heart, right? That theme is continuing to run through, okay? Those themes are continuing to run through the teaching. So he's back here again, focusing on those same themes. It's just in a different topic, and it's focused on money. And so then he says in verse 22 and 23, he talks about the eye, okay? And he says, look, the eye can either be good or bad. You can either have a good eye or a bad eye. And really what he's talking about here is if you do have material things, you can either do good things with it or you can do bad things with it. If you have a good eye, what are you doing with your material things? What do you think you're doing? You're being generous with it, right? You're using it for good. Okay? If you have a bad eye, what are you doing? All right, so how are you using money for evil? it's going to keep building into the next verse. What's the next verse? You all know that next verse. You can't do what? You can't serve both God and what? All right, so what's the issue with money? What's the problem with money? Loving it too much. What's the problem? What's the problem with it? You put your trust in it. What's the what expand on that? What's the issue with it? Putting trust in it. What happens when you put your trust in it? Put your attention into it. You don't think of God the same way as if you have no money. Expand on that a little bit. Okay, so 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. Why? You're all dancing around it. I'm just trying to pull it out a little bit more. I'm sorry? It's not eternity. Yeah? You want more? Okay, you can't serve two gods. Can't serve both. It causes a distraction. Everything you all said is right. You put that above God. Yeah, I'm sorry, say it again. Believe that gain is godliness. Yeah. Believe in what? Yeah, yeah. No, that's right.
You get proud?
Yeah. Relying on material instead of spiritual? I'm sorry? You don't have time for God instead of money? Okay. Anyone else? Yeah, sometimes you do things you're not supposed to do for money.
Put your security in it.
Put your security in it, yeah. You're never satisfied, yep.
It all starts with the heart.
It leads to worry. We are going to get to worry in a second, yeah. So everything you all said is right. What... When you have no money, who are you relying on? God. And what's your aim?
Please.
To please Him. And what's your goal?
Heaven.
And you know that you only get there by relying on Him. Right? And if you're successful and you have money, what's the danger of it? The risk is that you start to believe that you are successful without who? That you did it on your what? And that you were able to accomplish things and you no longer need who. Or you just forget about Him. And you run the risk of getting into a position where you stop realizing that you need Him. Right? And that's the risk. And so all the things you said are right. Okay? The risk with money, though, is that you stop realizing that you need Him, that you stop realizing that you have no way of getting to heaven without Him, that you become you run the risk of having a view that you were successful without Him, and you start to believe that you don't need Him as much. Yeah, so I don't know if everyone heard that, but what Phil's comment was when he talks about the love of money, it's not just focusing on those that have it, it's focusing on even those who don't have it but have a focus on trying to get it, you know, that allow it to become a distraction, that have a point of view that it will solve all their issues, and so that becomes their focus. And really, it's this concept of money becomes a distraction. It's distracting you from God. Yeah. So money can, it can overtake you, make you think you're God. So, okay, I'm quickly running out of time here, but that's okay. I got next week too. So, all right. So let's talk about worry. All right. So Matthew chapter 5, verse 25, and that, look, money is the concept of that is here because in chapter 6, verse 25, the first word in verse 25 is what? Therefore. So it's a continuation of this concept. Okay. And there you say, therefore, I say to you. So there's those words again. Jesus speaking with authority. He says, therefore, I say to you, do not worry about your life. Okay. So these are the words people circle. They're like, he is, you know, are you serious, Jesus? Do not worry about life. Don't worry about what you're eating and drinking. And he says, there's more, is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing. Okay, what does he mean? Well, what worry here means is he's saying, what it literally means is, don't divide your mind. Don't distract your mind. So what Jesus is saying is, don't let your mind become distracted. Well, distracted from what? What he doesn't want you to become distracted from is what his priority is, okay? And he's going to explain what his priority is. He's going to explain what it is in verse 33. But what he's starting with in verse 25 is he's saying, don't let your mind become distracted. Don't let the things in life distract you from God's priority, okay? And what is often the things that distract us is things that happen in life. And so he's going to go ahead and tackle those. And he's going to say, okay, well, there are things in life that distract you, right? What distracts us in life? What are the things we worry about? What worries us? The basic need, the things we all, how are we going to pay the bills, right? Food, clothes, right? And so he addresses all of that. And he addresses it in verses 26 through 32. And he says, well, this is why you don't need to be distracted. Okay? And so he says there's three reasons why you don't need to be distracted. And the first one is in verses 25 and 26 and then 28 through 30. And he says, listen, God takes care of the birds. He takes care of the lilies. He takes care of the grass. If he's going to take care of all those things, Why don't you believe he's going to take care of you? Right? If he's going to take care of those lesser creatures, then you need to understand he's going to take care of you. He's going to take care of his people. And so he says to him in verse 26, if he's going to, aren't you more valuable than they are? At the end of verse 26, if he feeds them, he's going to take care of you. Right? At the end of verse 30, will he not much more clothe you? Right? So that's the first thing. He's going to take care of all those creatures. He's going to take care of you. Then he says in verse 27, he's like, what does worrying, what does anxiety get you in life? He says in verse 27, has worrying ever allowed you to grow one cubit? Do you get any taller? Do you get any younger? Does it make you more handsome or pretty? Does anxiety give you any of those things? And we all know the answer is no. And then he says at the end of verse 32, your heavenly Father knows all the things you need. He knows everything you need. He knows in verse 31, don't worry about what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, what you're going to wear. And the end of verse 30, he says, oh, you of little faith, you don't need to worry about these things. So what he's saying is, look, God's going to take care of all the other creatures. He's going to take care of you. Worrying doesn't give you, it doesn't make anything in life better. And when you worry, what you're actually doing is you're showing God that you don't trust him. Right? You're showing God you don't trust him. And that's why you shouldn't let your mind be distracted. Now, we all know these are really easy things to say in a Bible class, but they're really, really difficult in practical application. But he's trying to remind them that these things in life, they become distractions, right? They become distractions, and they distract us from what? God's priority. And what's God's priority in verse 33? God's priority is he wants us, I'll do this really quick, and we'll come back to this next week. He wants us to seek first the kingdom of heaven. Why? It's an obligation. He wants us to seek it. It's a continual action. It's first. It's our priority. He wants us to seek the kingdom of God. He doesn't want us to become distracted with all the other issues in life. He wants us to focus on the kingdom of heaven. And it says, all these things will be added to you. What are going to be added to us? All the necessities of life. He is going to take care of us if we don't let our minds be distracted. And then he says, and by the way, at the end of the verse, this worrying about tomorrow, don't worry about tomorrow. Don't even pull in tomorrow's problems. Just focus on today. So if you put all this together really quick, if you start in 19, lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. If you have material blessings, do good with it, okay? Serve God, right? Don't become distracted with the problems because God will take care of you. Anxiety gets you nothing. Trust in him and seek first the kingdom of heaven, and he'll take care of you. Okay? All right, we'll come back and recap that a little bit and get into chapter 7. Thank you for your participation.